really the publisher's wheelhouse of what they're going to market and label the book as. I just kind of, I knew that there were some parameters that I had to stay within. And then after that, and I probably shouldn't even admit this, but as a reader, I wasn't, before I started this, I wasn't a big cozy mystery reader. I would tend to read darker mysteries or thrillers. That's just my fun reading, you know, as a, you know, outside of my writing hat. And so I didn't really know, I didn't have, you know, tons of examples of cozy mysteries to follow. So I just had to kind of start out and write one that I would want to read, that would be a little bit more towards the type of books that, that I enjoy. Because, you know, that's a really big tip they give to writers, right? You know, write what you would want to read. And so it was kind of a challenge for me because it wasn't a genre I was too familiar with. So I feel like I might have kind of made my own little niche within that, you know, cozy spectrum.
Well, because a lot of times the boyfriend or the love interest in a cozy is a policeman or a detective or something like that.
Yeah.
So it wasn't alone. So, Tracy, how did you make the jump from romance YA author to mystery?
Well, so I've always just kind of written everything. And so I wrote like a medieval series for Medallion a million years ago. And those all had like mystery in them because I've always liked it. And I actually am a cozy mystery fan, but it's different when you have to like all of a sudden like write it. And so when Patrice and I were given the opportunity to write the Mrs. Morris and the Ghost, and we got the series contract for that, it was like taking everything that we, cause she is actually a thriller. Like that's what she like reads for her downtime and non-historical fiction. And I do like the cozy mysteries. I like the Bad Hair Day series by Nancy Cohen. And Jennifer Ashley, anything that she does, historical mysteries are so great. It was so interesting to make our own way. Cause not only were we writing something together, we were writing something outside of our together genre, because we have been critique partners since like 2003, so like we were really good friends already. I edited for her indie stuff, so we could trust each other very much with our process and our ideas. So it was learning how to write the cozy mystery, and then I had the opportunity to do the Scottish Shire series on my own, and I loved it. Absolutely loved everything about having the character grow. Because as a romance author, I think that we really focus on character quite a bit. And so to take that and have her grow, I like it. I think it was okay. I'm glad I got to cut my teeth on the Mrs. Morris and the Ghost series.
So when you said you got the chance to write the Scottish Shire mysteries, Did someone, would your agent come and say, hey, they're looking for somebody to do this?
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
And how about you, Carlene? Was it the same?
Yeah, I was writing for Kensington for about 10 years under another name, and they were women's fiction novels that I was writing, which was, again, their label rather than mine. But, yeah, just after a certain point, my editor called me one day and said, what do you think about writing a mystery series for me set in England, a cozy mystery? And I said, I wouldn't have any basis to set it in England. You know, I've only spent like a week in London once and that was it. And then I paused and I said, but I could set it in Ireland. Cause I had been to Ireland. Everybody I hung out with in New York City where I lived was Irish. So I had my heritage is Irish, so I had much more of a firm belief I could set it in Ireland, and then it just, that was it. That history was made that day.
Tracy, how did you, since you were a historical, well, you liked historical mysteries, did you try to convince them that it should be historical because there's plenty of history in Scotland, or you were willing to do modern day?
No, I was totally happy to do the modern day. It was a big learning curve for me how to do. I am not good with accents. I suck at accents. Doesn't matter how hard I try. After a couple glasses of wine, I will attempt an English accent. It never works out. Never good. Never my favorite. So it was very, it was a learning curve for me to kind of decide how much to be able to put in the book. And it took, I made up my own system to be able, how much of the dialect to be able to put in. But that was enough of a learn. I love the historical, though. I mean, I would never say no to it. But my friend, Alyssa Maxwell, she does amazing historical history, so.
I know.
Never say never. Never say never. That's what I say.
Larissa, if you're listening, Tracy might like to think about something historical.
I'm sure Larissa is always listening.
I know. Yeah, that's how I met Larissa. I didn't realize Larissa lived in the same county I do.
That's great.
So it's really great to do all this work with her. So, Tracy, your first book came out last year, correct? In 2020?
The Murder in a Scottish Garden came out in 2020, yeah.
Yeah, and your second one just came out. So have you had a lot of chance to travel to?
There it went. It tumbled. Yeah, Murder in a Scottish Shire came out last year, and it was right in the middle of COVID, and so we didn't get a chance to do any promotion, and I was so worried that nobody would find the series. So we actually went on the road trip. Fiance, no, we get married next year, but we took a 2-month road trip, and we traveled all over, and we took pictures of the arcs that we had, and so we basically got to go all over the world. And so that was kind of what we ended up doing for promotion, because there really wasn't anything that we could do.
Have you been to Scotland?
I have not been to Scotland, but it's definitely on my bucket list. That was supposed to happen last year. So. Maybe next year. This year is Greece. We're going to be going to Greece.
Oh, nice. Well, maybe Paisley would like to take a side trip to Greece when she runs out of people to find dead in.
Yeah.
Because sometimes doesn't that happen that you need to take the sleuth out of the immediate area because you've run out of people.
Otherwise, nobody would ever move to Nairn.
Well, right, or they've run out of people to murder or to find.
Well, yeah, so luckily I think that there are plenty of small little towns up the coast that they could totally do. And I think that we're going to be keeping Grandpa around for a while, so that'll be good. He makes a really good kind of sidekick, I think, for Paisley. So, and I think that book four, we're going to find Craig finally. So we're going to find out what happened to her missing uncle. And there's all kinds of places they could go. You got to get creative.
And how about you, Carlene? Will Siobhan and her fiance, whose name is escaping me right now, are scheduled to be married in the next book?
They are. I've already let the cat out of the bag. In Murder on an Irish Farm, that's how it opens. The preparation, the I do's are coming. They are, yeah, which will open up a whole new chapter for them.
Will they be going anywhere on a honeymoon, or will they be staying?
That's a great question. They probably will be, and I was thinking, will there be a Murder on an Irish honeymoon? But I actually will be doing a Christmas novella featuring those same characters that will take place after the summer wedding. So readers are kind of going to get to miss their honeymoon. So they'll have to hear just like of a recap.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair. How much after Siobhan became the Garda, and now that she's a married lady, will her brothers and sisters take more of a role in the mystery solving? Or will they?
No, I don't think they'll take more of a role in the mystery solving, but I'm really excited about Murder on an Irish Farm because there are so many big changes coming to all of them. So I don't want to give them all away. But there are big changes coming not only to Siobhan and McDara, but the future of the siblings and what they plan on doing. So Your answer is probably yes, a little bit, because of one particular element that's going to happen with them. But Siobhan and McJarrah will still be the main, you know, they're the main people who do the detecting. They're going to still remain in their positions. Now, whether McJarrah has to go be a detective sergeant somewhere else, like, a lot of those details I haven't worked out yet. But it'll be fun to see how they handle being married and working together, solving crimes as well. It's going to be a challenge. I'm sure it'll be a challenge, but the other things going on in their life, I think, will help fill it out a little bit.
So, and how far ahead do you each plot your books? Tracy, you mentioned that Paisley's going to learn about her missing uncle, her mysterious uncle. But how far down the road do you...
I like to plan in trilogies. That's just how my head works. And so I have kind of an idea of what the next three books would look like, to be able to see where they need to, like, the little threads that you need to be able to put in book four to be able to pop in book six, you know. So I have that very loosely. I have a definite plot for book four, but five and six are very loose, but I have an idea, you know.
But, like, you know where the series, where some of the characters might end up?
Yeah, for sure.
And how about in each individual book? Do you plot it out and plan it out?
I'm a big plotter. I am, I think I plot beforehand. I do the plot board, got my post-its. I mean, I've done enough books now that it really, I don't do it as in-depth as I used to do, but it's just is like a really nice physical reminder to me of where, because I usually am writing a book in 3 months, and so 80,000 words, 3 months, you have to really be... I need to make sure that I meet my daily page count and all that kind of stuff. So that just really helps. But it also is, once the plot board is done, then it's, like, set in my head, and then I can just make lists. And then I just have my list, like, as I go during the day. And that can change, you know. Sometimes the characters don't do what you want to do.
Yeah, how about you?
As you know.
How about you, Carlene? How far ahead do you plot, and are there any surprises?
I just pretty much focus on one book at a time, although, like, once something develops, like, once I knew that they were headed towards marriage, obviously I knew that was going to happen, but I didn't know, like, how long I was going to drag it out, you know, how long were they going to be engaged, and part of it was Siobhan, too, not quite ready to get married and sure how that was going to change her life, and then I just kind of let the characters, like, I was actually going to even drag it out even longer, and then the characters kind of take over and say, we're ready to do it now type of thing. And with all the changes coming that are coming up in Murder on an Irish Farm, I didn't know until I started writing it that all this was going to happen. And then it was just so exciting to me that I thought, yes, this is exactly where it's going. Now that those decisions were made for them, I probably will start thinking ahead a little bit because it opens up kind of whole new avenues for them. But I pretty much just focus on one book at a time and allow things to pop up and things to happen and evolve. I know the characters so well by now that I can kind of adjust if they say things at the last minute that they want to say or do. It's able to know whether that's a good path for them or not. And then as far as regular plotting, yeah, for every book I'm required at some point pretty early on to turn in an outline. And it doesn't mean I have to stick exactly to it, but I have to have a pretty good idea of the characters and the murderer and the secrets all the suspects are keeping. And it's really hard, I think, to write a murder mystery by pantsing it, like, without some sort of idea of at least who the killer is, why they did it, who the victim was. Because all the storylines come from what characters are doing or already have done behind the scenes. But that doesn't mean it can't change as you write it, including even who the killer is. But at least you start up some kind of framework that helps you get started and then allow myself to be open to changes as I write.
Have either of you, since you're both plotters, has a reader ever gotten in touch with you through the magic of social media these days, and said, hey, wait a minute. 3 books ago, she had green eyes, and now she has blue eyes, or no, she couldn't. Or are you pretty attentive to details that doesn't...
Oh, yeah, I do get emails, because sometimes there are little typos in the book. Like, every book, no matter how many eyes go over it, there will be typos. I can actually be a little bit dyslexic. So when I describe in Murder in an Irish Pub, I described her engagement ring like two different ways in the book without, I got a lot of emails about that. And as long as you're kind, I appreciate it. The challenge is that you have to say, yeah, I'm really sorry. I know that mistake is there, but it's too late. The book's out. Unless, like, sometimes I can get in the notes for the paperback edition for them to change it. And I think they can change the electronic version on the fly. I'm not sure. But yeah, readers, especially mysteries, right, they definitely have sharp eyes. And there's something about the human brain that when you're too familiar with a subject, no matter how many times you go over it, your brain will just fill in the gap. And that's why we don't recognize it. Sometimes I want to defend myself because I want to tell readers, it's not that we're not like paying attention, but the brain just automatically fills in what we think it is. And that includes it can pass by editors who know the story well and lots of people. But I always appreciate that from readers, as you know, unless they're kind of not nice about it. Most of them are really nice about it. So one woman was like, oh, I just noticed it because I'm a geologist. And so I was really fascinated with the emerald and, you know, the engagement ring. And I thought, that is so cool, like that a geologist is emailing me and enjoying the book. And sometimes it's funny. I had no idea I'd switched the description. But, you know, that happens for sure. How about you, Tracy?
Oh, for sure. And especially because in the Salem Bed and Breakfast Mysteries, because there's two writers. And so we end up, like, we make sure that we've got probably four beta readers before we even send it into the editor.
Oh, that's smart. That's smart.
Because like you're saying, like, not only is it my eye missing it, but it could be hers. And we've got to make sure that it sounds like Charlene, so that we've got the Charlene voice. And even, like, I went over, like, the murder in a, I just got this copy edits actually for a murder in a Scottish social. And it's crazy to me the things that there's the typos that I swore wouldn't be there. They are. So yeah, mea culpa.
If somebody, you know, emails me, especially in a really nice manner, sometimes I'll say, hey, you know, I'll send you a copy of my book signed or some little sign of appreciation. I can't always do it, but sometimes I do it.
That's nice, yeah. So far we've been good. And the one time that, I think it was Mrs. Morris and the Vampire, they put it out on NetGalley so early that the readers, you know, there was something in there that needed to be changed. And so I was able to contact, I think it was Larissa or somebody, and they were able to change the e-file right away, you know, but the, and it was in enough time, I think, that they were able to change the template. So.
Yeah. The other thing funny about being a mystery writer is readers kind of like, and I don't blame them, they look at everything as a clue, you know? Sometimes my mom will call me in the middle of reading and say, she moved the curtain back, is that a clue? I'm thinking to myself, no, she just wanted to let the sunshine in, but I have to keep in mind that anything, any bit of description, any little sentence readers are going to think might be a clue. So that's, it's yeah. Funny and challenging too.
Do you ever put something in on purpose? Like to see, like moving the curtain. Just
well,
like, I think it's funny, like, yeah, like a joke with yourself, like, ah, you're gonna think this is something. I would do that.
Yeah. Sometimes there are definitely misdirections or anything, but you don't want someone to go too far down a rabbit hole on something that's supposed to be a description. Yeah,
because really, like, the reader's expectations for the cozies, they have like very specific wants of when they sit down to read that book. Yeah, but it's good. It's fun to be able to I've had people, you know, reach out saying that they get to see Scotland through Paisley's eyes, you know, that they have, like, I don't knit. So I had to call my friend Cheryl, who was like a go-to knitter. And I'm like, what size needle would this be, you know? People are like, oh, you should put patterns in. And I'm like, probably not going to happen. She's a pattern girl.
Do the readers ever get angry? Like, how could you make him the killer? Or how could you have killed that person? And I just used him, just old school. But how could you make that person the killer? Or how could you have murdered that person?
had that. I've never had that particular one. There was one, I keep mentioning my mom, she loves to read them, but there was one character that she felt bad that I killed off. But I've never heard that from readers yet. I do sometimes get complaints from American readers about the Irish names, being able to pronounce either the Irish names or the Irish slang or peppered with some Irish phrases. And I always just politely respond back the way they can learn to pronounce them because, you know, that was just my decision early on. Even some of the editors, like a common Irish phrase would be do your messages. And that means go shopping, right? And I had an editor email me and say, can't you just say she went shopping? And I'm like, no, because what I fell in love with was the differences, the little phrases, the names. And I just knew from the beginning, I kind of stayed firm on that. And I'm glad I did. But I once had a school teacher send me like a 3-page handwritten note saying, Siobhan should be Joanne. Owen should be spelled the American way. There's all this. And I just politely, you know, kind of gave her a pronunciation guide and said, thank you. I appreciate the time you took, but I want to stay true to the Irish characters. And, you know, once you learn to pronounce their name, it'll be easy from then out. But I realize there's so many Irish names that are spelled so differently than they're phonetically pronounced. And I get that it's a challenge. In the first book, I did have a glossary for readers to reference. And then it was a decision by the publishing company and myself that not to continue that because it kind of takes you out of the story world if you're having to put a glossary in front of every book. So even though I don't want readers to feel frustrated, I think they've kind of come along with me eventually. Now that there are 8 books out, they know how to pronounce them now. So.
Exactly. And for me, because I do Audible, so it was interesting to go from listening to the book on Audible and then I had a print book and I'm like, okay, that's what that actually, that's how that's spelled. So it was cool to do both. But that's what readers want. They want to go on that journey. They want, you know, so to complain about it.
Just a few.
Now, Carlene, you're also writing the Home to Ireland series. But that they start out, when the book comes out, it starts as a Barnes & Noble exclusive, correct? Like you've only done 2 in that.
I've done 2, and actually the news is Murder in Connemara, that's the second, will have a wide release in July. The first one was Murder in Galway, and then Murder in Connemara. That's an American, Tara Meehan, whose mother was Irish, and in the first book, she's returning her mother's ashes to her home city of Galway. And she also has an uncle and family members there that she gets to know. The uncle runs an architectural salvage shop, which I just love that idea. I wish I could own it and live there. And so she starts working for him. And then in book 2, Murder in Connemara, she opens her own little shop. Those are a 2-book series, and they're going to stop there. Barnes & Noble's decided not to re-up them. And actually, I'm starting a brand new series that will come out in the fall of 2022, I believe. I don't know the exact date, but around about fall of 2022. And it will also be set in Ireland, but these will not be cozies. They will be darker mysteries, like not incredibly dark, but I don't have to follow any cozy kind of guidelines. It will feature, though, an amateur sleuth, oddly enough, even though they'll be darker, and she's a traveling veterinarian. And it's set in Dingle, County Kerry. And we're going to name each title off of kind of a familiar Irish proverb or quote. So the first one's going to be called No Strangers Here. And that's from a longer Yeats quote about there are no strangers here, only friends you haven't met yet. So I'm so excited about the series. So excited. I can't tell you. Although I have a ton of work ahead of me, I've forgotten how much work it is to like create characters from scratch before you even get to the murder, right? You have to know your main players and characters, but I'm really super, super excited about it. And the Irish Village Mystery will continue, so.
Then I can't ask the question. I was going to ask, would the characters in your 2 Irish mysteries like ever meet? But that's kind of...
Yeah, no, I really don't want to cross those worlds, so... probably not, unless they do and they just don't know it. Right.
Will you be doing it as Carlene O'Connor?
I will, yeah.
I think that most, I bet you most of your cozy readers will go with you.
Yeah, I think so. And like I said, it darker doesn't mean they're going to be gory at all. It just means that, you know, there's not going to be kind of a whimsical, cute element to it. It's just going to be, you know, we'll see what it turns out to be. But I have permission to not kind of be constrained by a cozy label. Not that, and I have a huge appreciation for cozies and cozy authors, but they're just, you know, each one kind of comes with its own considerations, and I'll have some of those considerations that I'm kind of free to, they won't be marketed as cozy mysteries.
So what, either one of you are together, what, it used to be that cozies were an amateur sleuth, the unmarried women never had sex, they didn't curse, but the boundaries are stretching a little bit. So what can readers expect if they don't know what a cozy mystery is?
Yeah, I think you laid out a few great ones. It's usually a small location, right, where your pool of suspects are all in the same small location. Often they do revolve around food or recipes or knitting or some kind of hobby. The protagonist is usually a female and usually an amateur sleuth. And if there is sex and violence, it's off the page. I felt really challenged. You know, they swear a lot in Ireland, not even necessarily out of being angry. It's just an adjective. So that felt challenging to me in the beginning, although now that I'm used to writing them, it's not something I think or worry about at all. I think sometimes the first book in a series is when, you know, you have a lot of angst on you about the decisions you make, and then as you get to know the characters, it becomes a lot easier. And did you want to add anything, Tracy, with the cozy?
No, I think that you got it. Small town, hobby.
The Murder, She Wrote type, where the focus is on the puzzle and the characters rather than, you know, the violent aspect of murder.
So, Tracy, you mentioned that during your book release, you took a tour to try to promote it. How else has your writing or your changed during this time? And are you still writing? You're still writing other series.
I hate to say this because we were set up for so many different conferences and everything. It actually let me catch up on so many different projects that I was trying to juggle that it was like, oh, I can't go anywhere. Okay. I'm all right. I'm okay with that. So yeah, I was able to finish up so many different projects, and I actually feel much better, like more caught up with everything right now that especially like this last, I think the last thing that we turned in was Mrs. Morrison, The Pot of Gold on April 1st. So the last like 6 weeks, I guess, I haven't really been writing that much. So it's doing that. But definitely like I'm ready to get back into it again. I like to be busy. I feel like the more, and I love being on deadlines. So even before I was ever published, I wrote to a deadline, just because it made me, the writer's friends that I was very fortunate to have good writing mentors when I was first starting out. And they told me, you know, once you become published, you need to be able to, you know, so start now with the work counts and deadlines and stuff like that. It's a good habit to form. Do you have a writing schedule, Carlene?
I don't have a particular writing schedule. Writing is now my day job. I do teach some writing workshops in the evening, so I do write during the days. How much time I spend writing really depends on where I'm at in a project, and I'm usually juggling, so I might be editing one book, plotting another, and then answering interview questions for one that needs promoted. Like, once you have different series and a number of books out, it's usually a little bit of a juggling act. So I'm not exact as far as times and where I write, but I'm consistent within the inconsistency, if that makes sense. So
as much as you can be,
exactly.
So what did you do before you wrote, both of you, or what would you do if you weren't full-time authors or full-time writers?
I can't imagine not doing what I'm doing. So
is that what you always wanted to do?
for me yet.
Yes.
My mom has a story that I wrote when I was six called Tracy and Her Pet Aunt Blip, B-L-I-P. And Blip looks like a baked potato, but it had a beginning and it had a middle. It had an end. And so, yeah, it was my very first one.
I was four with my first one, The Boy and the Mouse, and I made a little cover and everything for it. But I have a background as an actress, and then I was a sign language interpreter for 15 years while writing. So that was the second job. I couldn't go back to that now, but, you know, I have some fantasy jobs like National Geographic photographer, and it would have also been good at interior design, things like that. But this is what I'd rather be doing. So I'm in the fortunate position that, you know, I am doing what I want to do. Even if somebody offered me like a fantasy job, I'd be like, well, I still have these books to write.
I have stories to write. I was a florist. I was, when my kids were little, I worked at the school, you know, but I was always writing. Like, I knew that that was always the thing I wanted to do. So my jobs, I didn't have like a career. But all of the little things that I've learned, I've managed to be able to put into stories. So,
yeah.
So what? How do you hope your next book is? How do you hope the release of your next book is going to go, or the promoting of it as we come out of this strange time? The mask ban in New Jersey ends tomorrow, and then a week later for other places. You know, and traveling is becoming more allowable.
Yeah. Well, we have a, in Delray Beach, we have a bookstore that's so great called Murder on the Beach. And we are doing a book signing for Murder in a Scottish Garden on June 26th, because that was the soonest that the employees kind of felt comfortable having an in-person. So even though it's like a month later than after the release, I still am, I'm still looking forward to being able to do it, so, yeah.
I'm just so grateful. I'm so happy to be vaccinated, and I recently traveled to see family that I hadn't seen in a year and a half, and I know bookstores can't wait to have people back, and libraries can't wait to have people back, and we can't wait to go to author events where we can, you know, see our readers and sign books, and it's exciting to have it all ahead of us, but I was also really happy about the fact that readers read a lot during the pandemic. It seemed like, you know, they had time. And so I heard from a lot of readers during the pandemic, and I think it's amazing how quickly we all got used to this Zoom thing, and, you know, we still went ahead with our events. I think it's, you know, as horrible as it was, I think, you know, it showed a lot too about the human will and the human strength and the ability to adapt to such shocking, quick, you know, I mean, historical pandemic, right, of our lifetime. And I was finishing up Murder in an Irish Bookshop during the pandemic, and there was a point like, how am I going to keep writing this book? Like, there's a pandemic. But I was happy to see that I started getting emails from readers now that they had time to read, and, you know, saying that they liked the books. And that really kept me going. I said, okay, like, this isn't just about me. I can finish this book because there are people that want it. And, you know, times like that as an author, because it is a lot of work, right? It's hard work. Like everybody works hard. But you want it to be so good, and you worry about it, and the worry makes it harder. So really hearing from readers is what kept me going during the pandemic. So thank you, readers, because authors do like to hear that, you know, their work matters to somebody. And then that helps me get out of my own head and say, like, I'm going to write the best book I can for the readers and for the characters. I'm so glad that hopefully the light's at the end of the tunnel for us all, I think.
But being able to write, too, was also an escape for me, like, because all of the pressure of the pandemic and the riots and everything that was going on, there was so much negativity that being able to go into our nice, cozy, happy little world where you have a happy little murder, you know, and you've got these, you know, don't make it too gory. So it was very good for me to be able to dive in and be it. And I actually heard from a reader who is in Germany. And I just had Murder in a Scottish Shire come out in Germany. And that was my first time I've ever had in, like, an international whatever.
I'm very excited.
He has been following me from the time that I was writing The Beagles 10 years ago. It was so great. And I was kind of having a bad day. And to be able to hear from her, Sandra Scholl, thank you, Sandra. It really did lift up my spirits. So please, readers, reach out to us.
And how can readers get in touch with both of you or either of you?
Mine is my email, tracyella@aol.com.
And you've got a website.
Tracy Hall.
I have it somewhere.
TracyHall.com.
And how about you, Carlene?
Yeah, CarleneO'Connor.net, and there's a way they can message me through that. And I'm also on Facebook. It's the author page. I do not check the personal Carlene O'Connor Facebook page, but the author page, Carlene O'Connor Mysteries, if you message me there, I'll see those messages. I should have put Carlene O'Connor under a different heading. Anyway, it's a whole Facebook thing, but don't message the personal page because I just won't see it, but the author page, I can see messages there, or CarleneO'Connor.net.
Okay. Do you, real quick, I meant to ask this a little bit earlier, do you plan on writing in any part of the pandemic into your mysteries? I read books 3 to 6 months ahead of publication a lot of times, and I've seen a couple people just kind of drop in masks, or it's where the pandemic is not a main character by any means, but it's acknowledged. Or do you plan to just skip 2020?
Yeah, I plan to just keep them in an alternate reality where there wasn't a pandemic. I saw a lot of discussion about this when the pandemic was going on a lot of cozy feeds or mystery feeds, and predominantly, and I felt the same, readers just kind of wanted not to have it in the books, although that's not putting down writers who make opposite choices. Like the TV show This Is Us, you know, did write it in. I think they did a great job with that. They didn't focus on it too much, but they made it part of the reality. I think when you're filming something, you have to kind of keep up with the times more than the book world. And I definitely think readers are totally fine with you just keeping their kind of little universe where there was no pandemic. That was my choice anyway.
No, I agree with you 100%. They want to escape.
Yeah.
Okay, is there anything else you'd like our viewers to...
I have to admit, when I was writing Irish Bookshop, I'd be like, oh my God, they're touching each other. They're standing too close to each other. Like it was starting to freak me out that they were behaving as if nothing was going on. So it's funny.
It's time for it to be done.
Yeah, I shook somebody's hand for the first time on Monday, and I thought, oh... But it's okay. We're both vaccinated and we're outside, and you know, I'm not going to wipe my face or anything with it. But but yeah, it's just all the things you take for granted for so long. So is there anything else the viewers should know? Or
I just hope everybody has a great weekend coming up and filled with fun and family and reading and whatever else you've got going on. Eating,
lots of eating.
So, Carlene is the author of the Irish Village Mysteries, and they're all available at the library and through all the usual outlets if you want to purchase them. And Tracy, the Scottish Shire Mysteries, both published by Kensington. So I want to thank you both for taking the time out today. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thanks. Good luck.
Thank you.
So, again, I want to thank Carlene O'Connor and Tracy Hall for spending some time with me this morning talking about their new mystery series. Or their mystery series, they're not their new mystery series. And definitely check them out at the library. They are available to check out. If you're not sure, then go online, hclibrary.us, and you'll be able to find out when you can get them, because they're all checked out right now, last time I checked. Or we'll get them from one of the main libraries for you. And before I end the show today, I just want to do a couple bit bits of housekeeping. Starting Tuesday, the library is, of course, closed on Monday for Memorial Day. And starting Tuesday, we will be open our new hours. We're going to come back to full-time hours, which is, and we've added Mondays now to our hours, Monday evenings. So we will be open 9 to 9, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at the headquarters of North County Branch Library. And Friday and Saturday, we will be open 9 to 5. And at the South County Branch Library, our late nights are Tuesday and Wednesday, 9 to 9. And Monday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, they're all 9 to 5, Tuesday, Wednesday, 9 to 9. And right now, we have not received any more guidance, so masks are still required. There will still be sanitizing stations. We are starting to schedule some outdoor programming. There will be some outdoor yoga coming up. So check the library's website, hclibrary.us. Click on the events calendar or just go to events and look at the event, check out the events flyers. There will still be programs online and virtually, but we're going to start having the book groups. They can meet outside. And like I said, yoga and some children's programming will start meeting outside. The Adult Summer Reading Club starts this weekend. The Children's Summer Reading Club will not start until the time when school is traditionally out, June 15th. But Tales and Tales, the Adult Summer Reading Club, starts May 28th, which is tomorrow. And you can go to hclibrary.readsquared.com to register. And we'll be using the online program again this year that was provided by the State Library of New Jersey. You can read books, play games, and earn prizes. There's also a spot where you can write a quick book review. If you would like to tell everybody why you loved the book so much, so check out that website. And that, again, starts tomorrow. There's just a quick flyer on the website if you click on the page, but it's what's better than enjoying a captivating book and a cold lemonade while sitting at the beach by the pool or in your backyard on a beautiful summer's day? Nothing. Join the Adult Summer Reading Club. There is a code that you can scan if you want to go right to the website to sign up. And if you were registered last year for the Summer Reading Club, you just use your same login credentials that you had then. And a couple weeks ago, I had Michael Udy from Act Two Books on talking about his Flemington Summer Book Fest and the local author showcase, which is scheduled for tomorrow. And I know the weather is not outstanding for tomorrow, but the book sale will go on as scheduled. And the Groovy Graveyard will be up here from Asbury Park as well. It begins at 10 a.m. tomorrow at 24 Central Avenue. And it goes through Monday. And Sunday and Monday, there's a fine arts festival, too, on Stengel Road, kind of parallel to that. So that'll be great. And there's some authors scheduled. They're scheduled right now for Friday and Saturday. The authors may be rescheduled for Saturday or Sunday. We are awaiting news at noon, the website promises. But there'll be local authors such as Nev March, Jim Gonneau, who is coming in at 1 o'clock to do his show, Taking Care of Business. There's all kinds of local authors. On Sunday afternoon, there'll be an Antiques Roadshow type crew on hand to bring in some books that you might have if you're curious if they're worth anything. Author DJ Murphy will be here. Charles Levine. William Lewis. So definitely stop in. And you might want to come back both days so you get to see everybody. So in the meantime, I want to once again thank Carlene and Tracy for taking their time out this morning. I want to thank Larissa at Kensington Books for helping put this together. And remember, the library will be closed on Monday, but we're always open online. Wherever you are, you can call, stop in, or go online. We're always there for you. Have a nice weekend.
USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
Senators grilled Dr. Anthony Fauci about U.S. tax dollars funding the Wuhan Institute of Virology and about the origins of COVID-19. Fauci says history has proven most pandemics are started in the wild.
So the historical basis for pandemics evolving naturally from an animal reservoir is extremely strong, and it's for that reason that we felt that something similar like this has a much higher likelihood.
The motive for Wednesday morning's horrible shooting tragedy in San Jose, California, remained a mystery overnight after more sad news arrived late Wednesday evening. A ninth shooting victim has died after being transported to the hospital. The shooting took place at Valley Transportation Authority rail yard near San Jose, California Airport. The suspect, 57-year-old Sam James Cassidy, took his own life after the shooting. USA Radio News.
Recently, Facebook announced its ban on former President Trump, but promised to review the ban in 6 months. Now, Newsmax wants to know if you think Trump should be back on Facebook. Vote in Newsmax's national poll and let us know your opinion. Just text the word North to 39747. That's North to 39747. It takes just seconds. Make your voice heard. We'll share poll results with the 30 million people who watch Newsmax TV. Forbes calls Newsmax a news powerhouse. It's already the fourth largest cable news channel in America, with great recent guests like Donald Trump, Mike Huckabee, Franklin Graham, John Voight, Alan Dershowitz, Ron DeSantis, Nikki Haley, Mike Pompeo, and so many more. Newsmax is on all major cable systems. If your cable company doesn't carry Newsmax, call them. Tell them you want Newsmax or you can switch. So vote now in the Newsmax poll on Facebook's Trump ban. Just text North to 39747. Let Newsmax and America know your opinion.
Some lawmakers are saying D.C.'s spending spree is out of control and in turn will severely hurt all Americans. Tim Berg from the Phoenix, USA Radio News Bureau reports.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell is criticizing the economic policies of President Biden and congressional Democrats.
Democrats had already dreamt up a massive, record-shattering Washington spending spree. Liberals saw the crisis as a tremendous opportunity to restructure things to fit our vision.
The Kentucky Republican speaking on the Senate floor saying Democrats are running up the nation's credit card bill. On Thursday, Republicans in the Senate are expected to introduce their infrastructure plan. From the USA Radio News Phoenix Bureau, I'm Tim Berg.
And in some sad news, former Senator John Warner, the longest-serving Republican senator in Virginia's history, died of heart failure Tuesday evening at the age of 94. Warner represented Virginia for 30 years, from 1979 until 2009. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, and I want to tell you that arthritis is not a genetic thing. It's not a disease of aging. Neither is osteoporosis. Get a hold of my book. It's All in Your Head. It goes into the 25 different diseases you get when you have osteoporosis of the skull. These are all reversible. You take the Healthy Bone and Joint Pack, the MSM, vitamin D3, stay away from all the bad foods, including gluten, and guess what? You'll regrow all your bones, including your skull and your legs and your hips and everything else. Contact us at usaradiohealth.com. That's usaradiohealth.com.
As China's embassy in the United States said that politicizing the COVID-19 issue would hamper investigations into the origins, the United States is pressing forward.
Today, the president asked the intelligence community to redouble their efforts to collect and analyze information that could bring us closer to a definitive conclusion and to a report back to him in 90 days. Back in early 2020, the president called for the CDC to get access to China to learn about the virus so we could fight it more effectively. And we will continue to press China to participate in a full, transparent, evidence-based international investigation with the needed access to get to the bottom of a virus that's taken more than 3 million lives across the globe.
Many Americans believe the extra unemployment funding for the out of work should end. Dan Araki reports.
A new poll shows that a majority of Americans agree with the moves that several states have made in ending enhanced federal unemployment benefits. At least 23 states have announced they will opt out of the federal program that provided an extra $300 in weekly unemployment benefits. A Quinnipiac poll released Wednesday showed that 54% of Americans believe that ending the extra payments is the right move, with 38% saying it's the wrong thing to do. State officials who have moved to end the benefits argue that the extra payments have contributed to labor shortages.
Thanks for listening. For USA Radio News, I'm Lance Pry.